basketball podcast. The trade is done. We can stop freaking out about it. Kyrie Irving is a Celtic. That's weird. Isaiah Thomas is a Cavalier. That's weird. Jay Crowder is a Cavalier. That's weird. The Nets pick is going to the Cavaliers. They're probably going to win. Joining me are James Herbert and Chris Barnwell, CBS Sports NBA writers. We're going to break this whole thing down again. We've talked about it in the past, but we need to talk about it again. So, all right, the deal gets done. Question number one is, did the Cavaliers do anything wrong in dragging this out the way that they did when all they got for it was another second rounder? James, you first.
I mean, it annoyed me, but I think the Cavs got what they wanted. Like, they got another asset. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of stupid. I thought that they already had a deal where I thought Isaiah's injury was kind of factored in. Like, they got a lot back from Boston in the trade that was originally agreed to. And I think a lot of that was because the Celtics knew they were not just trading two very similar point guards. They're trading two very similar point guards, except one is significantly younger and one has a serious hip injury that isn't healed yet. So it's only a second round pick in 2020. It's not really much of anything. But I guess there's nothing wrong with Cleveland technically asking for more once they saw the kind of condition of Isaiah's hip and got a little scared. So it annoyed me. It was kind of frustrating that this dragged on for an extra week kind of unnecessarily, but the Cavs got what they wanted out of it, so you can't really fault them.
Danny Ainge, who has been the most asset fetishizing GM in the league over the last 10 years, who several GMs and various front office people have complained to me about in terms of, like, he's just impossible to deal with because you can't ever get value. You can't even have, like, a reasonable conversation. It's such a, like, they have the best stuff, but it's a pain involving them because they don't want to actually trade any of it. That guy comes to you and says, I'll give you my third team All-NBA All-Star point guard and my valuable guy and my first round pick from the Brooklyn Nets, who I would not trade for Paul George with, for Kyrie Irving. My immediate reaction would be, I want to kick the tires on absolutely every bit of this. Like, I would be getting, like, x-ray scans done of everybody involved in this process. Like, I would be suspect as hell. And the other thing is, I don't understand this, and this has been pushed. By the way, I just gotta talk about this. I understand how it works. I do. I've been doing this long enough. I've covered it. I do a little bit of it. But look, if somebody with a vested interest in the outcome of a deal tells me something about that deal that provides perspective, that's not, well, we thought this, but it's trying to put perspective on a fact, I'm suspect of it. And that has not happened. Oh, the Celtics told them everything. Well, who told you that? That doesn't get asked. The answer is the Celtics. Of course the Celtics told everyone. No, we told them about it. We told them the whole thing. We told them what the deal was. We said the whole way what his situation is. But if you're Cleveland, you're like, I cannot trust that. I have to do an evaluation, not only with doing the physical, but my doctors who I've hired, who I trust, who have my best interests at heart, have to give their perspective on what the situation is. And we do not know what the differential was between what the Cavaliers team came up with and what the Celtics team came up with. Because it's suspicious as hell to me that IT didn't get surgery. Like, Thomas didn't get surgery, right? Which, if this is going to hold him out for any significant period of time, seems like surgery might be been a good idea. But it didn't happen, and then all of a sudden they deal him. Like, I wanted Cleveland, in the interest of everything being on the up and up, to do as much research into this as possible, to look at the entire thing. The idea that, like, Altman did something wrong here by wanting more value, if they went through it and were like, no, this is worse than what you said. Like, you said it was fine, or you said it was not great, but it wasn't going to be a big deal, and our doctors say that there's a significant risk of something else, we don't know. Maybe they came up with this exact same conclusion and Altman really was just screwing around. Even then, I don't blame him, because you have to exert as much leverage as possible. That's what Ainge does in every situation. That's the whole point. I find the idea that for some reason, like, GMs are going to hold this against Altman to be absolutely preposterous, especially considering what the Celtics have pulled off over the last like couple of years. Like, that's absolutely ridiculous to me.
No GM's ever going to hold this against them because every single one of them that's actually any good would have done the exact same thing.
Yes.
They would have gone straight for their best asset and gone down from there. I think it's hilarious that afterwards they were like, nah, okay, give us Jaylen Brown. And Danny Ainge was like, no, I'm not giving you Jaylen Brown. That's insane. So they eventually ended up giving a second round pick, which I think when we first heard about, we all thought, yeah, it'll be a second round pick, maybe a first if Isaiah Thomas is really hurt.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny to me, like, oh, they're trying to get a little extra out of them. I was kind of annoyed at how there was all this posturing, all this leaking, all this, how is he really all this healthy and all this and all these sources and everything. And then it's a second round pick. All this was for nothing, but I shouldn't say nothing. Sometimes second round picks pan out well, but you know, all this for what is
like
essentially
Isaiah Thomas.
Right. Like Isaiah Thomas or Jay Crowder. Wait a minute. But second round picks, they always kind of get knocked off as one of those, oh, we'll throw this in to kind of sweeten the deal kind of thing. Yeah. So that's kind of how it felt.
That pick likely becomes nothing. I so badly want it to become a like 5-time All-Star. Like I just really
want.
It would
be so funny.
It would be so funny. If the last pick became like this multi-time All-Star, it would be just unendingly funny. Regardless of what team it was, like that would just be a very funny outcome because if everyone's like, "You did all this for a second round pick," and it's like, well, they asked for more, and eventually Boston said no. And if Boston just says no, and you know that, because that was the other thing, is everyone's like, "Well, just take the deal," because Boston's offer is better than anybody else's. Okay, well they did that, but they got something extra for it. Like I just don't see that there's anything wrong with this in its entirety. I just think that everybody behaved, and credit to Boston, because Boston, I think, was way more compromised than what people made it out to be, in part because, again, the Boston Celtics were talking to everybody, anybody that will listen and will report it, but like the Celtics were in a seriously compromised position. This deal falls through, and they have a poison situation with an injured point guard in Isaiah Thomas. Crowder's hurt and pissed off. Like, you've just said, like, we want to build around Kyrie Irving. Well, never mind. Plan B. That's a really uncomfortable situation that could damage your chemistry. It just hurts everything. Like, they had to get this deal done. And credit to them for not being like, all right, we have to get this deal done. We cannot risk them going to Milwaukee. Like, we have to get... let's just go ahead and throw Brown in. Like, they held firm, and I think that was absolutely the right move. I would not have encouraged Brown or Tatum, and I never thought that they would. Like, I never thought Brown or Tatum were in on this. Like,
because the package was so good to begin with. Like, the Brooklyn pick could be a future, like, perennial star. We don't know.
Yeah, and, like, the Cavaliers, you know, the Cavaliers weren't going to get better return on that. And also, like, you know, with Brown, I'm really high on Jaylen Brown. Like, I'm just exceptionally high on Jaylen.
I've liked him ever since he got picked.
On Jaylen Brown.
The thing is, if you're trading Crowder, then you need Brown.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's part, and, you know, that gets into the dynamics of this new team. So, I've got a column coming out today. I just finished it. It should be going up here in the next hour or so. So it should be up when you listen to this podcast. Talking about the key question after, because I wrote all the analysis last week, the winners and losers, and you can find that on CBS Sports and all this other stuff. The key question that I had is, are the Celtics actually better? Because when I started looking at what went in and what came out of that team this summer, one, it is a startling, stunning amount of turnover for an Eastern Conference finalist team. Like, they are in no way the same team that they were last year.
Four dudes are coming back. One of them was a rookie last year. One of them was Terry Rozier.
Right,
like
for the uninitiated listening, here's a quick review. The Rice to the Brooklyn Nets 2017 number one pick, Markel Fultz, is out. Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, the Nets 2018 first round pick, unprotected. Avery Bradley, Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk. All of those guys are off of the Celtics.
Those are all rotation players.
Coming in, yep. Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, really good. Jason Tatum, still going great. The Lakers 2018 first round pick, if it falls on four slots, picks 2, 3, 4, 5, that's the only place that if it lands there, they get that pick. Otherwise, it transfers to the Sacramento Kings 2019 first round pick, which I think there's a pretty good chance that pick winds up after 7. I think there's it's unknowable, and that's why it's still valuable. But to me, I look at it and like, there's a pretty decent chance that the Kings are not picking top 5 in 2019. 2018? Sure. 2019, I have some more questions about. Aaron Baines comes in, Gershon Yabusele, Semi Ojeleye, and
Daniel Theis.
Daniel Theis, thank you. Those guys are all in there. There's the Theus I didn't put on my chart. I had to make a choice between Semi and Theus, and I went with Semi. There's a lot of... Here's the big thing. The central point of my column is that the ceiling for the Celtics got significantly higher. If everything works out, the Boston Celtics will be a better team than they were last year. There is a huge range of outcomes where their future is significantly more compromised than if they had just stood pat, added Hayward, and, you know, especially if they added any of the other stars that were available, or if they just kind of planned for the future, and they can still make that move. We can get to that in a second. But that's kind of my thought on it is, yes, if everything goes perfectly, their ceiling is better. And that's what's really interesting because, like, I mean, James, you and I have gone back and forth on the Celtics team over and over and over again. This deal and their offseason shows that Danny Ainge essentially agreed with me that this was a try-hard team that overachieved. I'm not kidding. Like, that's what this shows, is that that team overachieved, and he went towards something that he thinks is sustainable.
I think it shows that he had his eye on not just this year, but, like, a few years from now, and he always kind of did.
But then why trade the pick?
That's... Because it's what it took to get Kyrie Irving. Like, it's what it took to get a 25-year-old, like, four-time All-Star, whatever it is. And I'm not even, like, necessarily defending that specific move. Like, I would have liked them getting Paul George or Jimmy Butler a lot more than getting Kyrie Irving. But I understand the logic. And I just think what you're going to have to keep in mind next season is, like, yeah, they could be a worse team in the regular season. They could have a worse record. And a lot of that could be because you only have four returning guys. You're building something completely new. The identity of this team has completely changed. You got rid of like all of the guys that had tenure there. Like, I guess, is Marcus Smart the longest tenured Celtic now, I guess? So you're essentially building a new team, a new culture, whatever. And you have a bunch of guys that, like, when you actually look at the rotation, like, they're going to want Brown, Tatum, Yabusele, Ojale, like at least two or three of those guys to be in their playoff rotation. And those guys aren't necessarily going to be what they are in May, in October, November, right? So I think the idea is they build something throughout the regular season. And then, yeah, maybe in the playoffs, their ceiling is higher. Maybe they're a better team once the playoffs start than they were last year. But I think expecting them to be the number one seed in the East again automatically is a mistake because of just how much road there is to travel here. Like, they're completely starting anew.
I think the identity change is going to be a really good thing for them long-term because one of the things that was kind of difficult about them for the last few years, the Brad Stevens, is they were always a team that kind of, they played a lot of defense. They shot a lot of threes. They played really hard. They caused chaos, you know, all that worked for them. And that made it difficult for them when they did add pieces to make it kind of work. Like, when they added Al Horford, it was like, you know, Horford's going to make their defense a little better, but how's it going to fit into this whole identity of, you know, chaos team and all that? Now I feel like with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and, you know, some established young players, it's like, okay, we can start building an identity and going after players that kind of help our identity get better rather than instead of what always felt like they were a team that acquired talent to get better rather than teams that fit, like, the mold they're building. Because there's a lot of teams out there that they reach a point and they stop really caring about what the talent they get more than how they fit their system. Because, like, you see with the Spurs all the time, the Spurs, one of the weird things when the Spurs got LaMarcus Aldridge was like, that doesn't really fit the identity that they've been going with for so many years. And now Aldridge doesn't seem to be working there. We see why. That's, they're usually a team that goes with identity over talent. So I feel like that'll help Boston in the long term in the sense that they can actually kind of acquire players and look towards, okay, what's our system and how do we build towards that more than, okay, let's just get good players in here.
I think, like, the one thing that I do trust is, like, Brad Stevens' offense, Brad Stevens' coaching. Like, I do think he will make this team cohesive. They're not going to abandon the spacing and the ball movement and the unselfishness and all of that. Like, he's going to make sure they play that way.
Well, okay, let's talk about that. So, my concern, and I wrote about this when I broke down the deal with the fit of both Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving in one of the columns I wrote last week. This gets lost a lot and it drives me nuts. Isolations are way less often calls from a coach than what people believe. Like, there's this sense that, like, well, they just run a lot of isolation. The reason the teams often run a lot of isolation is star players are empowered to make those calls. And particularly what you see a lot with Kyrie is that the Cavaliers would go through a set and do all of this stuff and have something good going, and then Kyrie, because it's Kyrie and this is where his instincts lie, would get a switch or a situation he thought was preferable, and then up, back it up, dribble, shoot. Now, Kyrie's one of the most efficient isolation players in the league. Like, his isolation plays are more efficient than most teams' offenses. That's how good he is. Yeah. That's incredible given how inefficient isolation plays inherently are across wide samples. So it works. My problem is that isolation plays, even if they're efficient, there is a diminishing return, and it makes your teammates worse because it takes them out of the flow. And so my question is going to be, this is a big one. If Kyrie comes in and he says, look, I want to be the best I possibly can be. You're an awesome coach. You're the best coach I've ever had. Sorry, Tyronn Lue. I'm ready to be there. I've learned how to be coachable. I want to succeed. I know what's on me. Make me better. And they're running dribble handoffs with Al Horford at the top, with Kyrie coming off and shooting behind the screen where he's killer. If they're running high motion and Kyrie's getting into the teeth of the defense, and then kick, 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 and finding a guy, and then Marcus Smart's cutting underneath, or Terry Rozier's cutting underneath, or all of these things are working, and then Tatum spotting up from mid-range, it can be an absolute juggernaut. And they were a juggernaut last year offensively, too. It can be superb. But if Kyrie doesn't do that, if Kyrie says, well, look, I'm the star. I know better. I've won a championship. What have you won? And like, look, I'm the star here. I'll do, like, and to be fair, guess where he would have learned that from? LeBron. Like, that's been his role model for how to run a team. Only the problem is, Kyrie is certainly not LeBron James, and no one is. And that's always been the issue with LeBron. Is like, LeBron makes a lot of decisions on his own, independent of anybody else's input. But he gets to do that because he's the best player in the last 20 years. Kyrie Irving is not that. And I think that there's a lot of ways that goes haywire. And especially with the players that they've assembled, if you take the ball movement out, it's going to frustrate guys. Because this is something I always think about. Al Horford did not sign up to play with Kyrie Irving. And Gordon Hayward did not sign up to play with Kyrie Irving, even though Kyrie recruited Gordon, and they're supposed to be good buds. To me, it's notable that a lot of the acquisitions that they made. So I have real chemistry questions about how this is going to go. We have not seen Kyrie in a position where he has to be a veteran leader on a team ever. He got a pass when he was a youngster, but those teams that he was on were bad. And the debate is always, well, those were horrible teams with bad coaching. I know I'm amenable to that. You know, if he's learned and he's grown, again, it could be awesome. But I think that there's enough to at least suggest that there's got to be some question marks there and that there's a chance this does not work. And to me, it feels like it's a pretty significant one.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, he's going to have to adjust. And if he doesn't, then that's going to be a huge problem. I just look at it. I look at how Isaiah played in that system, and I don't see why Kyrie can't do a pretty similar thing. Like, Isaiah did a lot of stuff off the ball because he's such a good catch and shoot guy, and he can run around screens. Yep. And Kyrie should be able to do all of that stuff, too. I don't foresee a scenario where suddenly Al Horford isn't touching the ball a lot. Like, I don't see a scenario where Gordon Hayward is just a spot up shooter. Like, they want multiple playmakers. Like, it's sort of like they want to be more Warriors-y. And that's in terms of the defense and having guys that can switch a ton and a bunch of versatile dudes that don't really have a position. But I think offensively they want playmakers all over the place, and they don't want you to be able to ignore anybody. And I think that's the kind of system.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. They ignored Marcus Smart, but go ahead.
Sure. But I mean, Marcus Smart can make plays, though. Like, his problem is he can't shoot, but he can make plays, and Jason Tatum can make plays, and obviously Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford can. And I think even if you look at the way the system has run over the past few years, it's like you've seen Avery Bradley in spots take, like, run some pick and rolls and take more playmaking responsibility. Like, maybe Kyrie Irving's usage rate goes up a little bit, but I don't think, if it does, I don't think it'll be significant.
Oh, we should bet on this.
We should try to play team ball here.
We should do a bet on this. I'm gonna love this. We should definitely do a bet on this. So, Chris, let me ask you this. How long out do we need to be able to evaluate this trade for both sides? Like, how many years do we have to go by before we can really say whether or not this was a success or failure?
2 years.
3 years?
If 2 years, because Kyrie might leave in 2 years.
True. Yeah, that would be... That,
I think, like, 5 years. We have to know what this Brooklyn pick is going to be. Like,
yeah, but, like, if Kyrie leaves, that pretty much does it for Boston.
I'm looking at it from Boston's scenario. For Cleveland's, there's so many factors there. Like, first, you have to look if LeBron even stays, because they have to look at the trade entirely differently. Boston's is a lot more simple. I feel like it's 2 years. You have to look at how Kyrie... Like, the whole trade, yeah, four years, because you have to look at the trade, you know, young players with LeBron stays. Like, there's a whole lot of factors. But I feel like for Boston's scenario, like, 2 years, because Kyrie might leave in the first place. If it's a disaster, like, if they're not running smoothly, if they're not making the conference finals all the time, and, like, if they're not, like, the obvious conference final team in 2 years, then I say that's not good, because right now, last year, they were the obvious conference finals team. So they really need to get back to that scenario, and then they need to reach that. They already need to reach that, because they have to prove to Kyrie, yeah, you should stay here. Like, we traded for you. You're our guy. We need you to stay here, because if he leaves, like, it's over. They traded Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and their pick for the guy who left.
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie has to like playing with Hayward and Horford. I don't know who would not like playing with those guys. So it's like...
I mean, apparently he might have not liked playing with LeBron.
I mean, that's true. Like, that's a good point.
There are some rumors about
So to James, he's like, it's not entirely, but almost incomprehensible for you, for Kyrie to leave.
I would be pretty surprised. I mean, a lot can happen in 2 years.
Yeah. The thing is, we were all really surprised when Dwight left Los Angeles. So, like,
look, we've all been really surprised at literally everything that's happened in the last 3 months.
So, like, yeah. I'm at
Paul George plays for the Thunder now. The NBA is weird.
Chris Paul's a Rocket?
Completely unpredictable.
Chris Paul's a Rocket.
This is one of the most insane off seasons ever, which just really says something as their last year's money fest.
Jimmy Butler's a Timberwolf, and that just, like, none of us even talk about that anymore. It's like, oh, it's old news.
Yeah.
It was 2 months ago.
DeMarcus Cousins are on the Pelicans. That's still weird to me.
He's there for now.
Okay, so... Speaking of the Pelicans, all right, so Zach Lowe kind of snuck in a bit about, I'm a little annoyed at this, not with Zach, just in general, because it's, one, this is clearly coming out of Boston. And, like, Zach doesn't hide that at all, like, he doesn't make it seem any otherwise, but, like, Boston has pretty much started planting seeds that they're going to go, like, they are pulling a Lakers with Paul George, which we'll get to in a second, they are pulling a Lakers with Paul George with Anthony Davis, and are like, what they're basically signaling is, hey, Anthony... You ever want to get out of New Orleans? We're here. Great coach, Gordon Hayward. Probably Al Horford traded, but still, maybe he's here. Kyrie Irving, who you love. Like, it's very clear that the Celtics are signaling to everyone they can get their hands on that we're going to go after either Marc Gasol or Anthony Davis as an upgrade. Which, by the way, like, if you're Al Horford, you're like, thanks, guys. Thanks. Because there's almost no way to make the cap money work unless they trade Horford. Like, they can't acquire Davis or Gasol's money without moving Hayward or moving Horford, to my understanding. I don't know. I can't see any scenario where they have the cap. They have the space left to do that.
They trade Kyrie.
Right. That'd be great. They trade Kyrie for Anthony Davis. I would do that deal, man. If the Pelicans were like, hey, give us the Lakers / Kings pick and Kyrie Irving for Anthony Davis. Like, if I'm the Pelicans and Davis had said, I'm out, then I would be, like, all over that. But we are so far away from that. Like, Davis has never indicated he wants to leave. It's not that he can't get there. He just hasn't yet. But, more importantly, he's, like, years away from his free agency point. Like, we're just years away from that point. And I don't understand, even if DeMarcus Cousins leaves, I'll say this. I don't know Davis well. I've interviewed him, like, 2-3 times. I don't have any sort of sense from him that he's the kind of guy that's going to be, like, I definitely want out. I want out of here. If you told me, like, Kyrie Irving will eventually want out of the Cavs, I would have said, well, not when LeBron's around. But after that, then obviously. I just don't understand where this conversation comes about either. Like, I don't understand where it comes about Gasol or about Davis. And maybe I'm just being blind on those things. But I do not see – I don't see either of those guys pulling an Irving and demanding a trade out.
I think it's because we're always searching for who's going to be the next star that's going to be traded. And I think the fact that we have to reach there does kind of explain more why Boston did what it did. Like, after they missed on George and Butler, Like, you don't actually know when the next star player is going to be on the market in trade talks, and that they went and got a guy they believed to be a franchise guy. We can disagree about that if we want, but that's what they thought, and they went and they got Irving. And I think if it wasn't him, then you look around the league and who else do you think is going to be attainable in a trade? Like, these things, despite all the crazy stuff that's happened this summer, like, these things really don't happen that often. And it's really hard to get truly elite players. And I think we're also in this weird time in the NBA where everybody wants to assemble these super teams that could theoretically challenge the Warriors because it makes things seem more interesting in the bigger picture. And people look at Davis and Cousins and the Pelicans, and they're just like, just get him out of there. Just put him on a better team. And you look around the league and you say, what's Marc Gasol doing on this like consistently solid team for the last decade? Let's put him on a super team. Like, I think that's just like where we've got now, is like, let's just pile everyone together so the conference finals and finals are more interesting, regardless of how realistic that actually is.
Also, New Orleans is just a perennially easy target for any of this, just because that organization is just ran so weird in such a strange way. Like, I'm pretty sure there's not many people saying Dell Demps would have a job right now if he had not pulled off that insane DeMarcus Cousins trade during the All-Star game last year. Right. Like, I'm pretty sure that was a job-saving trade. They've always been this team that makes a lot of weird decisions. They've had an awkward roster throughout the entirety of Anthony Davis's career because they pretty much tried to make the playoffs as soon as they got Davis. So they've always been this really awkward team, which leads them being like, you know what? Yeah, let's go get Anthony Davis. Why would you want to stay there? They're never in contention. They're perennially mediocre. They never look like they're actually going to contend for anything. The organization doesn't look like it's very stable all the time. So why don't we go for Anthony Davis? And I feel like that's part of why he gets linked there. And then the other part of it is just Boston constantly wanting to add top talent because they're one of those franchises that are, no matter what player, they will always link themselves to them in any way. I think they've been linking themselves to players for years. I think they even linked themselves to LeBron when he was leaving Miami the first time.
Yeah. Something to watch as the more stars come up too. Like, we're just, you say like this stuff doesn't happen very often. True, but we're just going to keep having more and more stars. Like, this has been insane. I cannot get over how crazy this entire summer has been. And we won't have anything like this for a while, but man, it's been nuts. Okay, the Lakers today, the NBA announced that they have been fined $500,000, $500,000, which is talked about as nothing, even though I'm like, it's $500,000, for tampering with Paul George. The investigation did not reveal evidence of an agreement or understanding that the Lakers would sign or acquire Paul George. The conduct at issue involved communications by Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka with the agent representing Paul George that constituted a prohibited expression of interest in the player while he was under contract. So, I guess the question is, let's start kind of at the big picture. Do you think the Lakers should have been punished more, given the Magic Johnson, Jimmy Kimmel interview, the evidence of a conversation between Pelinka and the agent, and the context of how this has evolved in a very public manner? Do you think the Lakers should have been punished more?
James. No. Never mind, go ahead, James.
I mean, I think the only reason they were punished really is because of the Magic thing. Like, they gave the Lakers a warning after that. And then after that, they were kind of like, this was a situation where, especially because of all the rumors, they were under the microscope. And I don't think it's that unusual for GMs and agents to talk and for names to come up that technically aren't supposed to. I just think this was one of those special cases where it turned out to, like, be something the league really wanted to investigate. And I don't know, like, if they should be punished more or not. Like, I don't know what the difference really is if it's $2 million versus $500,000, like, what that really does for, like, a franchise that makes as much money as the Lakers does, or what it does for the perception. Like, I honestly don't even think this harms the Lakers. Like, I don't think this hurts their perception around the league. I think other players look at this, and if anything, they're like, oh, yeah, they're star chasing. They might get Paul George. Like, everybody knows it. I don't think this is, like, particularly bad publicity for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I would have banned their ability to sign George.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. Why?
And the reason is because I think players deserve all the freedom in the world to make their decisions in free agency, but this was conducted in part in conduit with his agent. Like, he was involved in that process. And even if George didn't know about that conversation or didn't have anything to do with it, I don't want to punish him. I don't want to punish George for that, and it sucks. But for me, there has to be an understanding that when you're under contract, a guy's under contract. Like, a guy is under contract with you, you want to keep him, and until you lose him, teams cannot come and be scalping around and pushing him out of your city. The way this went down, All-Star Weekend, this stuff started coming out. Just right around the week of the trade deadline, this stuff started coming out. Sam Amick was all over this for USA Today, talking about how the Lakers' expectation is that they can get Paul George. And, like, that, the situation spiraled so quickly out of Indiana's control. Like, that was the first report, was that the Lakers are going to target Paul George and are going to try and acquire him. And then, all of a sudden, George is unhappy with the lack of communication from Indiana, even though, like, Larry Bird at every turn was like, out of my cold, dead hands. Like, you're not getting Paul George. I'm not trading him. That's why the Celtics offer didn't matter, because Larry Bird was like, I don't care how many picks you offer me. I'm not trading Paul George until I know he's gone. And then he was gone, and then Larry Bird's like, I'm out. So for me, you have to be able to protect these teams from this kind of external pressure. The Lakers showed a wanton disregard for the other teams that they are in a... Like, okay, this goes into, like, a whole bigger arc thing of philosophy. I am hardcore into the idea of the social contract. It's a big deal to me. Like, social contract in any sort of environment, I very much believe in. And the NBA teams enter into somewhat of a social contract. And the teams that violate those things and go well beyond those things, I feel that there's an element there that where they cross lines. And if you cross those lines, you should be punished for it. The NBA has taken way too lax a stance on tampering. Way too lax. And I get why. Because they're like, I can't tell a player he can't have a conversation. I can't dictate a player's personal conversation. But the fact that Draymond Green is outwardly like, oh yeah. Yeah, no, I called KD right after we lost when he was still under contract with the Thunder and said, come on. And he said, yeah. Like, that's messed up. That the Thunder are like losing a player actively by a representative, even if he's just a player, a representative of another team coming while he's under contract. Like, you signed a guy for a contract. Draymond had been calling him the entire year. And so for the Lakers to do this on a team level, that the fact that the agent was involved, that's a really big deal. And the Lakers trade is a joke. Like, Magic's on Kimmel laughing about it. Like, ah, ha, ha, no big deal. Like, oh, this is going to be funny. Come on, Paul George. Come on. You want to come? Like, it exerts all of this pressure on the player. And you can say, like, well, he's going to go anyway. It's still his decision. Absolutely. But there's got to be some of these guidelines drawn. And I'll tell you what. The other thing is, like, the reason I would do it is you do this once. No one's ever crossing that line again. If you had been like, Lakers going to be ineligible to sign Paul George as a free agent. The fans would have flipped out. The media would have flipped out. No one's ever doing it again. Ever. No one's crossing that line. Everything would have stayed below board, which is where it belongs, because when it becomes public, not only is all this stuff damaging for the Pacers, it's publicly embarrassing for them. It's publicly embarrassing. And if you want to say what was embarrassing was what they got back in that trade, okay, but part of the reason that happened was as a result of how this entire thing played out. Like, everything went wrong for the Pacers. Their position was continuously compromised by what happened, and much of that started with the Lakers' interest in George, because that mitigated every other team from being willing to take a chance on trading for him, because they were like, he's just going to go to LA. That's already a done deal. And the Lakers did nothing to hide it. And to me, like, propriety does matter in this situation. So that's why I do think that it should have been I don't care about the fine. These teams are worth billions of dollars. Who cares? Right? And I'm not saying it doesn't matter. It's $500,000. That's a lot. And I'm not angry that they didn't. Like, this was their decision, and they're like, look, we can't, you know, some of this stuff is just going to go on, and that's how it is. And I'm like, that's fine. That's cool. You know, and it's, like, great for the Lakers, because the Lakers are still going to get him. That's great. Like, I think they're probably still going to get him, which screws OKC. But at the end of this, I do feel that there's something wrong with the fact that you did absolutely nothing to deter this. You did absolutely nothing to deter this kind of behavior. Unless you're a team like that doesn't have a huge payroll and is like, we can't afford $500,000. Like, the Kings are like, not doing that ever. don't have that kind of money to blow. So that's where I come down on it. I get the opinion otherwise, but to me, there should have been some sort of example set of like, no, look, tampering is not allowed. Like, we have contracts for a reason. There's a reason we're not an at-will organization.
Well, my only issue, if you're going to look at this, you have to look at like a lot of other stuff. Like, there are deals that are very much agreed to before July 1st. Like, how did the Houston Rockets execute a sign and trade for Chris Paul with the knowledge that he was just going to sign there in free agency before free agency had actually started?
Yep, that's messed
like,
up too.
There was like, Ron Baker agrees to this crazy deal to come back to the Knicks before free agency starts. They announce it a month later. Like, I don't really care about tampering. Like, it really doesn't bother me. But I think if you're entirely
pro player, you don't care. Like, and a lot of people, especially in media, are, and for good reason. The players are screwed in a number of ways. Ask Isaiah Thomas. But I try and be really down the line in terms of protecting both teams and players.
Well, I just don't think there's an innocent team here. I don't think there's a team that is totally playing by the rules. So I think if you're talking about changing this entire thing, then just making one example out of the Lakers and Paul George and then restricting what he can do in free agency, to me, doesn't solve the problem. I think you need to take a wider look at how you're going to police this. And a lot of this is like logistical. Like, how is the league feasibly going to track all of this communication? Sometimes the communication doesn't come from somebody who is directly employed by a team or an agency. Like, people can get their messages where they need to get them. And the league has basically taken the official stance that the stuff that you were talking about with Draymond Green, like player-to-player tampering, they don't care about. Players can say in the media directly that they want to get this guy, or that they talk to this guy during a game, or they talk to this guy at All-Star. And there's a tacit understanding that that is not tampering, even though if you look in the rule book, players are technically a part of it. They're not supposed to. And the reason why is that players talk all the time. They see each other during the summer. They send texts all the time. There's no way to monitor everybody's group text. And if you're going to try to monitor executives and like everybody who comes in touch with them and friends of like employees of teams, it's a big deal. It's a tough thing to actually track and then punish teams for. And I think if they're really going to make a concerted effort to stop it, then it needs to be bigger than just like, okay, Paul George can't sign with the Lakers.
Paul George has never really done anything to tamper any Lakers rumors at all, or like deny them. Like, he's not even given like the BS thing that we always hear from players. Oh no, I'm this player. He kind of did with the Thunder about like a couple weeks ago. He was like, I'm a Thunder now. But he didn't like say, no, I'm not going to the Lakers. Like, and I get that maybe he doesn't want to publicly be seen as lying to the fans, maybe, but just, I know his agent was involved, but I feel like the agent is a representative of the player, and it's not like the Lakers were trying to convince Paul George, hey, maybe you should come do this, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It was more Paul George has been, like, forever being, I wouldn't want to play in L.A. Maybe he's been telling his agent that. Maybe he's been implying that to Indiana his entire career. I don't know what he's been doing personally, but just he's never once done anything to quell those rumors or deny those rumors, and I don't feel like the Lakers should be punished in the sense of not being able to sign Paul George just because they're like, okay, this player clearly has an interest in us. We're going to try to get that process started maybe a little early. I think Paul George is just as responsible for why he's being connected to the Lakers as anyone else, because if he doesn't want to be connected to the Lakers, he very easily could have come out and said, no, I'm not going there.
Well, but there's a process, right? Like, we've seen it before when, okay, you say, like, when it comes out, player has interest in signing with team, like, wants to be traded to X. That team can go and say, and actually ask the team and be like, hey, can we have permission to talk to your player? Like, clearly he wants out. Like, you want to have conversations about trade. We'd like to get a sense of where he's at. Can we have a conversation about it? And then that team can say, no, he's under contract. You contacting him is a violation of tampering rules, and we will pursue those penalties against you. Or they could say, yeah, we understand where we're at. Like, we know the deal. Feel free. Like, reach out to his agent. Have a conversation. You're not going to hear any problems from us. Like, that's part of the process. They have that process built in. Like, that's something that the league has allowed. there's a way to do this. The Lakers didn't do that. The Lakers tried to go under and basically tear the heart out of the Pacers from underneath. And people are going to say, like, it's sports. It's what you're supposed to do. Well, there are rules. Like, there are rules in sports, too. There are constructs in the way that these things are built.
I get it. I just don't, like...
No, again, if you're pro-player, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're pro-player, no, you're just, like...
I prefer everything following rules, but just,
it's
like...
It's not... It's don't. Just what's realistic. It's just how are things done? What, like... We talk about potential trades all the time. Well, like, well, this team shouldn't acquire this guy unless they know that he's going to stay. Or like, well, oh, if the Celtics are getting Kyrie, then they must know that he's excited. Like, does that mean they directly talk to him? Maybe. They might have gone through the official process. They might have gotten permission. They might have talked to him. Or they just might have been delivered a message that he would be cool with it.
But look, there's also, like, you're removed from the idea of that. And if you, I get, like, all right, here we go. The big disconnect probably here is whether or not you care about things being above board and known or not. Because some, I understand the perception of like, well, look, if it's going to happen, who cares if people know about it or not? It still happened. Either it's right or it's wrong, you know? But I don't really find it to be that way because I'm like, no, the fact that this was so public, that this was played out in public, and like the Pacers could literally get on Twitter and watch their trade value sinking. Like, the Pacers could literally watch their player being torn away from them and their value in getting return on him dropping every second with the amount of reports that were coming out. And those things, right. And the Lakers played a hand in that. The Lakers publicly played a hand in that. Like, the Lakers actively worked to completely, like, publicly ruin the connection of a team to a player that they still held under contract. And not one of those.
Some of this was also, like... Some of this went back years in this particular case. Like, before George signed his extension with Indiana, there was speculation that he would be kind of the bridge from the Kobe era to the next one, because Kobe
and if you want to say,
was
like,
his favorite player.
Yeah, if you want to ask, like, who's responsible for Paul George leaving, like, the answer is the Pacers. Because the Pacers, like, Larry Bird made a calculated mistake, which is in 2014, he said, we can't win this way, we have to pivot. And let David West go. And, or was that 15? And yeah, it's because 14 was when he let Hibbert go. Like, he cleared out Stevenson and Hibbert, and he broke up that team. And Paul George was pretty clear about it last year. He was like, I missed the chemistry of that team that we had. We had something really good going. Like, that really, they did that, and then they said, like, you got to play power forward. And Paul George was like, I don't want to play power forward. I'm not going to play power forward. No way. Like, that's...
Yeah, I think it wasn't just that they broke up the team. It was they didn't replace it with something that could be that caliber and that had the potential to grow. And, like, they did get Miles Turner out of the season where George missed most of the year and was hurt. But aside from him, they really didn't get other building blocks. And they kept trying to sign, you know, like, pretty good players and veterans that could... help them, like, fast track it, but they didn't turn out to be the right guys. The chemistry was never the same. They could never have a balance of offense and defense. And everything they tried, whether it was like changing coaches or whether it was trying to change the pace or trying to play Paul George at four, like, just nothing quite clicked. But I don't think he was necessarily wrong to break up that team, because I think even in their last season together, they had that disastrous second half of the year where things just totally fell apart. But it's a matter of, like, where the pivot didn't work. Like, they didn't wind up just kind of rejiggering the thing and putting Paul George in the position to succeed like he had gotten used to. And then that means he can look back and say, man, I miss what we had. We had leadership. We had these tough guys. We really knew how to play with each other. We had an identity. And now we don't have an identity at all. And that was the issue.
To your point about Indiana being able to go on Twitter and literally watch their trade stock dropping, which probably because of the Los Angeles leaking things, how do you feel about, like, you know, when we were able to follow almost certain trades, like, just go step by step more? I remember the DeMarcus Cousins trade happening. That's getting mentioned a lot today. I remember when that happened, we were able to follow him getting traded from the Kings step by step to the point to where the deal was on VDEX's desk. like, at what point should we, should the access through sources and everything, like, just be like, okay, this is a stopping point. Maybe it should be more, less tampering and more like how much is getting out publicly.
Well, again, to me, it just comes into the fact that, like, the fact that it was mentioned in the press release says a lot. I think if, I honestly think, based on how live a slap on the wrist this was, that if the agent hadn't reached out, or if the if Palinka hadn't reached out to the agent, if that conversation had not taken place, I think they'd probably get away with nothing. I think if they're just like, look, you know, he made a comment that was ambiguous at best on national TV. We warned him about it. It's over. We consider the matter closed. But that, yeah, that contact matters. And you could say, like, well, yeah, the contact matters and the fine was levied and that's the end of it. That's fair. But again, the issue is that when you look at the, like, what's the result of it? What's the outcome that you want? What you want is deterrence. Is you, it's not about punishing. It's about, like, we, like, you don't want teams tampering with one another. And if you open the door and you just, like, say everything goes, I think you are going to find some situations that are going to get uglier and uglier. And look, a lot of this is also, if we're going to be totally honest, it is in protection of small market teams, because it's not going to happen with
big, it should be,
big market teams. Like, it's
big market fans hate, big market fans hate this, but I really feel like there should be protections for small market teams, because even in the social media age where you really can be a superstar no matter what city you're in, like, players obviously still like those big markets, so there should be at least some protections for them.
I wonder what it would be like if they seriously just said anything goes, and you could have, like, general managers, like, bullying other general managers through the media. Like, he knows he's not going to be able to keep this player, and
it'd be European soccer. Think,
like, no, it'd be like, we track this during the summer where, like, players follow each other on Twitter and recruit people and ask fans to, like, retweet, like, you know, when there's, like, a big free agent meeting and the team makes a whole big thing about it. Like, what if that was just happening during the season?
Danny Ainge would get punched again.
You could, like, taunt the other team for having a player who's going to leave this summer. Like, that would be hilarious.
Or it goes even further. We're excited to announce that we're going to sign Paul George next summer. Like, think about that. Like, think of like the Lakers announce in February, like, hey, want to let you know, season tickets are coming available. Come check out Paul George and the Lakers.
You just have this big banner ad on Lakers.com, yeah, and then Photoshop the Lakers, like, jersey while, like, he's signed with the Pacers.
Like, while the Thunder are making a playoff push. Like, how pissed would you be? Like, it'd be funny, but it'd be really, it would be kind of crappy for all those teams. And
yeah, I mean, those examples show why there are rules in place, but, like, it would be pretty hilarious if it was just anything.
Four or five teams go, oh, congratulations to us, we just signed LeBron James.
Okay, so we are 40-some-odd days from the start of the season. We are, like, 3 weeks from Media Day. I mean, it is happening. The season is going to be here. Preseason games start in October. Thankfully. Is there an under-the-radar kind of storyline that you're going to be interested to see this month leading up to it? Like, what are the things that you're looking out for? Because, like, some of my stuff is, like, I'm curious. Now I'm curious about this Boston thing, and I'm just like, how is this going to go? Like, this seems just really weird. And, like, oh, hey, Kyrie Irving's, especially, like, I just keep thinking, like, you're Gordon Hayward, and you're like, yeah, like, I'm gonna come in. And, you know, Isaiah is, like, the obviously the vocal leader, but, you know, where they kind of sold me on I could be the best player, and that was kind of how it was gonna be, is Gordon's the best player but Isaiah's the leader. And now it's like Kyrie Irving is the face of the franchise and Gordon Hayward is just, like, the sidekick who's supposed to play defense and do some stuff.
No, it's not that.
Look, man, they traded the Nets pick Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder. You don't do that unless Isaiah Thomas is the face of your franchise. Period. End dot. That is it. He
mean,
is the face
mean
of that
Kyrie
franchise.
Irving? Yeah. I don't think there's one franchise player on that team. Like, I think Horford's the locker room leader, first of all. He's the culture setter there. And he was that last year, even though he was his first year with the team. Anyone around the Celtics will say that. And then I think Irving and Hayward, those are the two, like, star offensive players that are going to be making the most plays. But I don't think there's this big separation where Kyrie is the clear number one and Hayward is the sidekick.
Yeah, that's usually how it works out when Kyrie has the ball. So what are the things that you more think about? Like, what are you looking forward to, like, tracking?
This isn't an under-the-radar storyline at all, but what the hell is going to happen with Melo? He's still a Knick right now. How is that not done?
I tell you, like, I continue to hear the same thing, which is they got a deal. They've got, like, 3/4 of the deal done, but they got to get another player moved. They got, like, the third team has to move a player to make the deal work, and they can't find they cannot find anybody to take that player. I also heard this one. I don't know about. I'm a little more suspect on it, but I did hear like that Houston had found multiple options, and they were just evaluating. They were waiting as long as possible to see if they can get a sweeter deal in return on what they have to give up. I don't know if I believe that one, but so these are things that that are floating out there amongst in the sphere. It seems like there's a lot of options on the table, but no one's really willing to just be like, okay, because no one's willing to just take the bite on it.
When did the Harden trade happen? Was it the day before the preseason, or was it right after preseason ended?
It was the weekend before the preseason started. So media day was I don't know if it was that Monday or the week after. I think it was maybe that Monday, but it happened on a Saturday night. And the reason I know that is because at the time, it was me, Zach Harper, and Royce Young were working here, and I was in Denver celebrating my anniversary with my wife, and Zach was at a party where they didn't have cell phone reception. It was going to be in a dead zone, so Zach was just off the board. And Royce was at the Notre Dame Oklahoma game when Harden got traded. And so none of us were around to ride off of it. And so I am screaming down up I-25 with my wife gripping the side of the car I don't want to die on our anniversary. I don't want to die on our anniversary, as I'm going 90 miles to try and get home to ride on it. So I know it was a Saturday night, but I think it was the Saturday night before training camp. I think that was the thing is Harden basically got on a plane, hopped off it, and then had to go into immediately media day stuff.
I thought he did media day in OKC already.
Maybe he did.
Huh. I don't know. Either way, just keep an eye on that date, and that's when Melo's going to get traded.
You guys aren't on aggregation anymore, but this has been a summer of, between Kyrie and Melo, it's been one of the most annoying August ever, because usually August is slow enough to where if you want to go up and get off and go get food for 20 minutes, yep, you don't have to worry about anything.
Yep.
Anytime you want to go do anything, you have to message someone, hey, are you going to be near your computer in case Kyrie gets traded while I'm out for 20 minutes or whatever? Just the entire August.
Yeah, I literally told Jack Maloney, I was like, oh, we don't do anything in August. I was like, we don't do it. I was like, all you gotta do is get some stuff up in the morning, make sure that we've got some content. Feel free to leave. You can come back as long as you're within range. It's totally okay. It's not a big deal. And then, no, that is not how it's gone down. Is there anywhere that you want to kind of see a surprise come? If Melo is just I'm tired of this, let's just get it done. Is there anywhere that you would love to see him go?
Portland.
Yeah, Portland would be cool.
Be funny.
So I have a big thing on Dame that came out yesterday. I wrote a big thing on Damian Lillard. I asked myself the question, I was like, where does Dame go from here? And I was like, oh, it'd be a good column. And so I did a deep dive and looked at his offense and his defense. And I found some surprising stuff. My big takeaway for Portland is that they've just put the worst weapons next to him. I am more convinced than ever that they should trade CJ McCollum. And I love CJ McCollum. I think CJ McCollum is great. There's a handful of teams that he would legitimately make them into a top five conference team. If you put him on Memphis, holy God. Holy God if you put him on Memphis. He'd be perfect there. Never going to happen. But the problem is basically that he and Dame are so similar, they can't really make each other better. They make each other better because of gravity, but they can't actually interact in any sort of ways that provide a function of the offense that is reliable to be able to go to. They just kind of each individually do their things. They have no pick and pop weapon at all. None of their guys are good at pick and pop. I mean, literally none of them. And if you want to ask about Nurkic, Nurkic literally took 17 shots out of the pick and pop last year, and he missed, I think, 13 of them. They don't have any role men. All of the role men are bad. Again, you want to say Nurkic? All of his role numbers are terrible. He's a great passer out of it, and they create a lot of offense that way. And that's excellent. I think there'll probably be some adjustments once the scouting book gets out on that a little bit. But that's a really positive thing for them. But generally, in terms of actually Nurkic finishing at the rim, he was really bad at it. He was just really bad at finishing at the rim. They don't have the kind of wings around them to be able to defend adequately if you have Dame and CJ who are physically limited. Dame's defense is actually not that bad. I was shocked. I was like, no, he gives good effort. He's just short and he can't get through screens. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, Dame has always tried on defense.
Yeah, he tries. A lot of it, I saw him, he was digging down and was like, all right, Patrick Bradley or Patrick Beverly, I'm going to lock you down. Got down in his stance, was right up on him, and Beverly just blows by him. Just, he wasn't even standing there. So, like, there's just stuff that he can't do, but he gives really good effort. There's no, like, lack of effort on his part. He gave way better effort than Isaiah Thomas did last year, having watched a lot of Thomas's. Like, Thomas's problems are size, but Thomas also, basically because of his size, is like, it's not going to matter what I do, so I'm just going to stop. Dame gives really good effort. Melo's interesting. Like, that's a really... He would give them a lot of the offensive weapons, I think, that would help them. In really big ways, and you could pair him with Nurkic, and that covers for your defense a little bit. All of those things would kind of help. It's still three suspect defenders, but I mean, it's an interesting idea. I'm interested to see where he goes. The other one I think is interesting to think about is Miami. I'm not sure what the deal would have to be that they would have to give up to get Melo, but I continue to think that's like a really interesting idea, especially if Wade was like, "Hey, I'm gonna get bought out. Like LeBron, I don't want to go spend the winter in Cleveland. Why don't you get traded to Miami and I'll meet you there?" Like, and then you got...
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and then you got...
I find Melo in, like, the Spoelstra culture is kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
Like, I think it could be great for him, or he could just hate it.
Right. Right. All right, Chris, what are you looking forward to? What are you keeping an eye out for?
You mentioned Miami. I'm actually interested in all the teams that kind of stood pat in the summer, because so many teams made changes and they're the ones that everyone's going to be focused on. I'm really interested in the Torontos, the Washingtons, the Miamis, the San Antonios that just, they said, you know what? We're not really going to do anything this summer. Like, we might add a role player here and there, but really we're just going to repeat what we did last year and see how it goes. I want to see if like they either make any last minute changes, especially in the case of Miami, who has a chance to add Dwayne Wade, or like, cause there's still a couple players out there. Like, I think Monta Ellis is still an NBA player. Personally, he's not signed anywhere as far as I know. So I think
Michael Green is not signed.
Right. There's players that could still go places. So there's a couple last minute additions that could get made that I'm kind of interested to see if like they actually happen or if they're just going to stick to their guns and not move anything.
It cannot happen. I wish Chandler Parsons was healthy for a lot of reasons for Memphis, but I was realizing that a Jamichael Green Chandler Parsons trade involving Andrew Wiggins makes a lot of sense for both sides. Like, Jamichael Green next to Karl-Anthony Towns would be absolutely awesome. Like, a combo stretch four who defends and rebounds at a high level. Like, Jamichael Green's, like, a way better Gorgui Dieng. He's not as big, obviously, but he's way more versatile. That combination, if you had Parsons spotting up on the wing alongside Jimmy Butler, like, neither one of them having, like, Chandler, Parsons wouldn't need the ball. That would be really interesting. I keep thinking about Charlotte. I keep, you know, and the reason is...
Oh, I'm so excited for their season.
The reason is I keep coming... Every time I do these, like, stat looks at, like, okay, who was really good last season in these categories on Basketball Reference, Nicholas Batum keeps popping up.
Like, he's really good. He wasn't that great last year, but he was really good.
Well, he has, like, he had, like, a terrible season, and his metrics were still really good. And so it's like, okay, if Marvin Williams has a bounce-back season, he's getting up there, so he may just be starting to slide. Kemba was, I thought Kemba was more worthy of an all-star nod from basically the start of the season until this, around December 20th. I thought he deserved it over Isaiah for that first like month and a half of the season. I thought he was legitimately better than, because Isaiah, I remember, slumped, and then at the end of December just started popping off 50-point games like it was nothing. But Kemba was ridiculous until mid-December. Just crazy good. And then
have you seen his pull-up jumper numbers last year? They are absurdly high. Like, I think he was in Steph Curry range.
But it's also like, can he get any better? Like, can
that was what when he was going into last season, I was on what was the pod, the one that Mike Prada has over at SB Nation. I was on that podcast,
Limited Upside.
Yeah, I was on that, and we were talking about Kemba and trying to figure out if he, I was like, I don't think he can really get any better besides becoming a better shooter. And then last year he became a better finisher, and I was stunned by that because he's already a really solid defender. He's a Like, he became an incredible finisher. He's a great shooter. Just, I'm not sure how much better he can get, but just, he managed to shock me last year, so maybe he does. I feel like he should be at his ceiling at this point, though.
I think it's him having, like, if Cody Zeller is healthy for the whole season, if Dwight Howard can be, like, a decent pick-and-roll partner for him, then just having a role guy all year would help him, right? Because, like, yeah, I think his numbers dropped off, just like the whole team's got way worse as soon as Zeller got injured last year.
Yeah, when Zeller got hurt, and then pretty much right when Zeller got hurt, a bunch of other guys got hurt at the same time too, and the bench was already kind of suspect last year, and then just it got even worse when the injuries came through. So then they really, and they hit a rough stretch like right at that same point, because you get these teams where they, like, bad things just keep happening. They kind of just snowball into more bad things until, like, you know, if the whole season's lost. I feel like that a lot of that happened to Charlotte, because you look at their point differentials and their metrics, and it's just like, this was a much better team than they should have been last year.
Cool. Okay. That's a good pod. Good pod. Kyrie is a Celtic. That's still weird. Isaiah is still a Cav. That's still weird. Jay Crowder, that's going to be an awkward training camp with him and J.R. Smith. That's just going to be really, really awkward. It should be really great fun. We'll be back later this week with the next crazy thing that happens in the NBA. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Catch you later.